This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack. But with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. Again, welcome to the show. This is a special edition of Your Money Matters. Kurt Rogers with us from Affordable Ventures Mortgage. Good afternoon, sir.
Nice to see you. Now, not to pick on you any, but you went hunting, so it kind of was like a six-hour walk in the forest.
Man, I tell you,
didn't have any luck.
Well, we were archery hunting, and we found some elk, but, you know, everybody's different on what yardage you're comfortable in shooting and what's ethical in shooting, and so mine's about 50 yards. And closest I could get to a bull was 81 yards because you have a range finder
with you to
see what you're doing, you know. And we had a great time and several
beautiful
guys,
weather up there.
Oh, it was. I mean, it low 30s at night, so it was crisp in the mornings. And when the sun went down, you needed a light jacket. But man, upper 50s, low 60s during the day. It was beautiful over in Kremlin.
Very nice.
Well, sir. Let's talk about rates a little bit.
Who doesn't want to talk about rates?
What's happening in the mortgage world?
Well, we're hearing and we're reading all these articles about rates going up, rates going down. The feds are probably going to lower the rate. Some are thinking a quarter. Others are hoping a half. If you read on MSN, they're talking about dropping rates to zero. First question is, how does anybody make any money at 0%? To be honest, I'm in the industry and I can't figure that one out. Mm-hmm. But I believe rates are going to stay pretty consistent around the 3 to 3.5 mark. I think you're going to see that stay there, and that's on a 30-year fix. So those numbers are going to be pretty stable. They might come up a little bit. They'll go back down. But that's what they're thinking they need to do by dropping the Fed's fund rate. It doesn't necessarily mean that the mortgage rates are going to go down. They're controlled by the bond market, but we're still going to see rates between 3, 3.5. It's going to be pretty steady.
Okay. Affordable Interest Mortgage, your one-stop shop for all of your mortgage needs. Once again, 720-895-0500. Well, again, our show is Your Money Matters, and a lot of times we have a lot of guests designated toward your finances and about money, but Kurt does a great job in doing things for the community. We do a lot of things for nonprofit organizations, and today, something a little different, and looking back, we've got a couple people that have written some books, but we have an author with us today, so tell us what's going on.
Okay, this author's name is Justin Matott. I've known Justin for a couple of years, and, you know, I do a thing at the church called Angel Tree, and one year he gave us a whole bunch of books to give away, and that's when I really started to get to know him. I thought he wrote one or two books. Come to think of it, he's probably written a library of books about kids in different events, and I decided he needs to be on the show because what he writes about is close to a lot of our hearts. Welcome to the show, Justin. Glad you're here.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
All right. So sitting down and just writing a book. Now, and I've heard terms like ghostwriters, different things like that. So what's the process of writing a book, first of all? I mean, do you use other writers and other people that kind of come in on this, or is it all just you?
Well, a ghostwriter would be spooky. I've written books under a pen name, which means I'm not using my regular name.
Gotcha.
And you do that for a variety of different reasons. But most of my books are under my name. And so basically what I do, my process of writing is I'm very creative and I'm undiagnosed ADD, except by my wife, very diagnosed. and so I have ideas constantly bombarding me. And a lot of people talk about writer's block, and I'm the opposite. I have to figure out what to do with all the ideas I have. And sometimes I work on them and think, this is really awesome, and then I reread it about 2 weeks later. I think, what was I thinking? So everybody has a different process. I'm not as structured as a lot of writers, where they'll just sit down at a desk, and like Dr. Seuss used to show up at the desk with a suit and tie so that he was all business. And I've never been in a suit and tie writing.
He's dressed up today, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
He's from Hawaii today.
Yeah. Hawaii.
Since I know a lot about you, Justin, kind of explain to folks how you get, because you've not always been a writer.
Right.
You've always had that dreams and thoughts and things, but you've not converted it to writing. Tell us how you went from the corporate world into writing.
Okay. Well, I've always been a storyteller, and storytellers are the best writers, I think, because basically if you can tell an oral story, my mother got so tired of me telling her stories over and over, she told me to go sit down and write it down. And she was an English professor, so I thought, if she likes the story, I'll go write it down. She was just trying to find some peace and quiet. And so then I would come back and read to her what I had written, and she'd say, okay, we're not done yet. Go back to your room. I'll call you down when you're ready. And so, I mean, it's one of those things where organically somebody asks me a question, not very often will I just say yes or no. I'll tell a story to answer the question. And there's a time and a place for that. And the time sometimes is just to sit down and write it down.
Right.
But, you know, you observe something in life because there's stuff going on all the time. And I think as a writer and a lot of creative people will see something differently and glean something from that. And then it becomes a story above and beyond what the story was actually that you watched. Does that make sense?
Yes. When did you write your first book?
My first book came out in 1996.
Okay. So, and what was the topic?
It was a book I had written three different novels and submitted them to New York for publishing, and nobody was interested. Because, well, there's a lot of reasons for that, mostly just bad writing. But I had this one agent who told me, you know, I really like the way you write. When you find your story, I'll be interested in representing you. So I had an unfortunate incident in my life when I was in my late 20s. I lost my mom, and my mom was just a real rock in my life, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to cope with the rest of my life having two little kids. They didn't have their grandma anymore. And so I went to the Tattered Cover looking for a book, and I just couldn't find anything. So I just started writing, and I started sharing those stories with people, and I ended up self-publishing that book. And I published 5,000 copies of it, which is ridiculous for somebody who's never been heard of. You know, I wasn't an author. I was just a writer. And 3 weeks later, 4,700 copies were gone. So that was a salesman in me.
But yeah, see, explain how that works. How did that happen that you got rid of, you sold 4,700, or 47 books?
Well, you have to believe in yourself. Yeah. And so everywhere I went, I would ask people to get on the train. You know, I was the engineer, and jump on my train because you want to be part of this. And I'm just very confident. And I guess the one way that it really worked well for me was I had an advocate at the Tattered Cover, which is the premier bookstore in America. And this woman was very, very adamantly, she had read some of my manuscript and said, this is going to be a big book. I really like this. And so when I published it, I was fully expecting Tattered Cover to fully support me. And she had quit. And so and I went down to meet with her, and the new buyer came out, and I had a box of 52 books with me because, you know, you got to think
big.
You're going to at least want one box. You know, yeah. I got 12 more in the vehicle if they want more. And the guy said, you know, we always support local authors, so I'll take four. And I'm like, well, I got 5,000 books. This isn't working for me. And so I told him about Net90 and how, you know, that worked with me. Don't have to pay me until they're all sold, but I would really like them in three parts of your store. And he's kind of looking at me like, so you're telling me how to merchandise? And I said, yeah, pretty much. And about 3 days later, they'd sold through that first case. And so they ordered another 200. Well, then I went to Barnes & Noble and said, Tattered Cover's already ordered this many, and the regional manager said, I'll put 100 in each of my stores. So that was off and running.
Wow, cool. So if you ask people, Kurt, what do you think? If you say, hey, what makes a good book? What do you think people, I mean, yeah, if I ask you, know,
well, for me, when I'm reading the book, something I can relate to. You know, Cosby, for example, when he told jokes and stories, he told stories you can remember when you would kind of flush a coat down a toilet. You know, different things we did as kids. You can relate to that. I still remember that story that he would tell.
But you only remembered it when
about
you flushed
Fat Albert and the games that they used to play.
Oh, yeah.
You can relate to what the person's talking about. You can put yourself in that picture
right.
of words.
Right, yeah.
To me.
So is it an... Because, like, you're right, I think, you know, you see where authors or maybe go to the mountains and get away from things and all that. I guess, I don't know, looking for that inspiration. Is that is that what you consider an inspiration of something you get about a topic? Or, it's just the ideas that flow?
I do my best writing when I'm running or skiing because my mind is active and working, and so the ideas are just flowing. And I've learned to put my notes into my phone and then go back and write it. But I know some people really need to go to certain retreats and things like that to be inspired. But I can sit in a Starbucks and listen to dialogue and think these two people should be in this book. It's people are interesting. Sometimes I feel a little creepy because I'm listening to people and they're
eavesdropping.
At me like, yeah, I'll use this.
Yeah. You don't get their permission, but that's okay.
Well, I don't verbatim.
Yeah. Okay. So that's pretty. So your first book then was about the passing of your mother.
Yeah, it was about the eternal love of a mother, because I felt my mom's presence in so many of the things that I did, and people really started to relate to that, because if you've lost somebody, there's a lot of grief. There's a lot of things that go along with grief. But one of the comforts is with my mom was knowing where she was, that I was going to see her again.
Sure.
And I knew that God was allowing her to, you know, like speak into my life, because my mom was 40 when she adopted me, and so she's a very mature mom and a lot of fun. But she had, you know, she was a first generation immigrant, and so I didn't have a chance with excuses. So she just raised me to, you're gonna be something in this world. So
wow, cool. Tell you what, we're gonna take our first break. Check out his website. It's JustinMatott.com. JustinMatott.com. If you got any questions, maybe you've been thinking about writing a book and got questions, 303-477-5600 is our number. We'll be right back.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the Asset Manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loan to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Got a road trip planned for getting ready for your next outdoor adventure? Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at D&D Tire Service. At D&D Tire Service in Parker and Aurora, they understand automotive issues can be a headache, and they never come at a convenient time. D&D Tire Service is family-owned and operated and is truly your one-stop shop for all of your automotive needs. All tires are reduced, and for a limited time, there are some great rebates saving you up to $200. From belts to tires, wiper blades, oil changes, D&D Tire Service has you covered. For the location nearest you, call 303-699-7337. That's 303-699-7337. D&D Tire Service is the official auto repair shop of Sportsman of Colorado Radio. Let D&D Tire Service keep you and your family safe on the roads. DNDTireService.com.
The tingling and numbness in your feet started a long time ago, and it's only gotten worse. It's finally getting to the point where you can't sleep at night. It's starting to affect your balance, and although your doctor prescribed medication, you worry about the side effects. Dr. Dean Anderson, chiropractor with Front Range Medical Center, offers an advanced treatment for peripheral neuropathy that can greatly reduce your nerve pain. Regain feeling and mobility without taking prescription medications. At Front Range Medical Center, Dr. Anderson and his team treat the source of the nerve pain using one of the most advanced forms of electronic medicine to help their patients experience long-term success. You know the problem won't go away on its own. Call Dr. Dean Anderson today and mention Haystack Help Radio to receive a $27 consultation, including a neuropathy-specific exam and a review of your health history. Find out whether or not you could be a candidate for this advanced treatment. Call 720-851-9694, 720-851-9694. You have nothing to lose but pain.
Have you been considering an RV, or are you looking for a place that will help you keep your RV in top condition? Let me tell you about my friends at Cousins RV. They've got three convenient locations to serve you in Loveland, Wheat Ridge, and Colorado Springs, which includes full parts and service departments at all three locations. Cousins RV is locally owned and operated by Jim Humble and Drew Bryant, with over 40 years in the RV industry. Cousins RV offers the top manufacturers in the industry, and they have a huge selection of pre-owned RVs at every price point. Service is key at Cousins RV, and they can handle any repair, even offering a mobile RV service. Hey, we all know accidents can happen, and at Cousins RV, they have their own collision center with a paint booth to fit the largest of RVs. Come to the place that has the best Google reviews from any RV dealer in Colorado and ranks number one in customer satisfaction. Owners Jim and Drew are on site daily. Be sure and let them know you heard about them here on Haystack Help Radio.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio and a special edition of Your Money Matters brought to you by Affordable Interest Mortgage. Once again, any of your mortgage needs, give Kurt a call, 720-895-0500. In the seminar, we'll mention it here again tonight at 6:30 at the Memory Lane Museum in Highlands Ranch. For more information, you can go to Kurt's website, aimortgage.com/events, or you can give him a call after the show. And Kurt's going to be reviewing what you've heard him talk about on our show many times, the asset manager loan. And be a great event. I promise you, this place is very cool. Going to have some good food for you, some ice cream, and it'll be a fun deal.
That's why I go. I like to ice cream Sundays.
I know. I told Victoria before I left it. I said, hey, we might be doing something at
Sprinkles
6:30.
And Oreos and cherry. Yeah, I'm all in on that stuff.
Justin Matod is our guest, and Justin is a author and has been a friend of Kurt's here for a number of years. And now, bullying.
Yeah, that's right. You write a lot of books about bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And most of your books, besides the first one about your mother, is more about literature for children and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But in your experience, your books on bullying kind of come from a personal background. If you don't mind, share how you got to that point and how you were bullied in school.
Okay. Well, the books aren't about bullying. They just have bullying remedies in them where my characters take care of the bullies, but they do it in a way that's smart. But what happened when I was a kid, when I was in fourth grade, I had an eye patch and a leg brace, and I was in a Catholic school, and so I had to wear a little uniform, so I looked like a little domino, and only time I've ever worn dress shirts and ties. That's why I don't know. So I was kind of a kid who stood out. I was skipped a grade, and so the kids, they already had a predisposition not to like me because I was, you know, younger, and I was supposed to be in the younger grades. And so when I showed up at class, there were these three particular boys in my class that were just mean. They were just mean kids. And Sister Jean Claire was mean too. You know, that my teacher was somewhat of a bully. She didn't really like boys very much, especially me. And because I always, you know, would stand up and wiggle, and I was just one of those people. And so the bullies targeted me, and generally speaking, what happens when a bully targets, especially when they're in numbers, when there's three bullies that target you, the other kids don't want to be in the crosshairs, so they don't have anything to do with you. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to play with you because they might get caught up in the whole issue. So for a period of time, I was fairly lonely in the fourth grade. And then it started getting very physical. You know, things aren't quite the same these days with bullying. You know, the kids aren't as physical because they won't tolerate it. But back then, you know, it was just tolerated or, you know, I would say I tripped and fell when I had a bloody nose because I didn't want them to be more punitive with me. And I was really fortunate to have parents who really believed in my gifts, which were storytelling and humor. And my dad noticed that I wasn't very funny, and I wasn't, you know, running around, goofing around, and jumping off the walls and telling stories all the time. I was just kind of a sad little boy. So my dad sat me down and wanted to talk to me. And once he realized what was happening, he said, you know, go to school and make those kids laugh, because if you make them laugh, everybody likes to laugh. And so I didn't have anything to lose because they were going to pummel me.
They're going to punch anyhow.
Yeah. And I had a big brother that was picking on me in the bunk beds, and so it's like I couldn't get away from it. And that was another part of it, is my dad, in the same conversation, told me a couple of my brother's fears. And my brother was afraid of the dark, and I had no idea he was afraid of the dark, because I thought the dark was delicious. I thought it was a great place
really
to be for stories.
It's your mind.
And so when I found out he was afraid of the dark, and he was afraid of a story that I had made up when we were camping called The Man in the Woods. And but I would say with my squeaky little voice, the man in the woods. And it freaked him out. And so, you know, he got up from the fire pit and went, got in the tent, was plugging his ears. I had no idea any of that had happened. So once I had was armed with that information, I knew what I needed to do. And so I went to school, and the bullies came after me, and I was on the jungle gym. I'll never forget that day because it was the first time I wasn't hiding behind trees or hiding, trying to be invisible. And I was just out in the middle of everywhere because I just had had it with being picked on. And they came up and demanded I got off their jungle gym. And I just jumped down and looked at them and told them they didn't own the jungle gym, which is really a bad idea. And the meanest kid, Ronnie, just looked at me and he said, "What'd you just say to me?" And I said, "Why don't you guys like me?" And he started laughing at me, and he started making fun of the way I walked and making fun of the fact that I couldn't see out of my eye. And one of his friends said, "Just knock it off. Leave him alone." And that was the moment that I realized, wait a second, there's some humanity in this group.
Yeah.
Maybe this guy's a big brother and just saw, you know, a little brother that was being picked on. And so Ronnie turned on him and threatened to, you know, punch him. And then Ronnie was embarrassed because he'd been, you know,
called out.
Yeah, yeah. And bullies don't like that because they're the biggest chickens you'll ever meet. And so I told him, you know, if you knew me, you'd know I'm the funniest guy you've ever met. And that's a big brag. And he looked at me and said, "You think you're funny, make me laugh." And I'm like, "You're like a lemon face. I've never even seen you smile unless you're hurting someone." But I started, you know, telling the story, and there was something about it that made this kid that had stood up for me snort. And, I mean, when he laughed, he just went... And I started laughing really hard because it was just really weird to me that he laughed that way. And so my laughter just created, you know, more humor in my story. And pretty soon, Ronnie broke, and he had the strangest laugh I've ever heard. It was more like a scream, and which cracked me up. I guess if you don't use those muscles, they don't work very well.
Really. Hmm.
And so I got the three kids laughing, and then Ronnie, the meanest kid of the three, just looked at me and said, "Wow, you really are funny." And I was like, "Yeah." And then I closed my eyes thinking, you know, here comes the punch, and he walked away. And then the next day they came looking for me and said, "Do you have any more funny stories?" And I was like, "Practiced all night, man." Let her rip. And then after that, they announced at a kickball, which was the worst thing for me, playing kickball because of my leg brace.
Right.
And they announced that I was first picked. And Ronnie told everybody on the playground, "Anybody messes with Matai, you mess with me." And I was like, "I've got a bodyguard now." And so after that, I was, you know, free to just play with the other kids. They were free to get to know me. And I realized what people really liked about me was my sense of humor. But what my brother didn't like was the night shortly thereafter that I told him the scary story in the bunk beds, and he snuck out and slept with my parents, and then I had it. Because all you had to do is threaten. "I'll just tell your friends if you do it again." And so he ended up sleeping in the bathtub a lot. So that was kind of how I got rid of the bullies in my life. And because there's bullies everywhere. There's bullies as adults. And so years and years later, I was a keynote at a Iowa Writers Workshop, and a bunch of teachers were there, and they were asking questions. And you get to the point at the end of your keynote where there's like 10 minutes for questions, and they have microphones all over this big auditorium. This woman got up to the auditorium and said, "So, Mr. Matad, I went to school with you." And I said, "Oh, really? You're from Colorado?" And she said, "Yeah. Went to St. Joe's with you." And I was like, "Oh, what grade?" And she said, "Fourth." "You're a weird-looking kid." And I was like, "Thanks for pointing that out." And she said, "But, you know, you had this, I remember, like, you had this big transformation. I can remember it vividly because I felt so sorry for you. But then you ended up owning the bullies in your life. And as an author, have you ever thought about writing for kids about bullying?" And I said, "I haven't." And she said, "Well, then you should." And I said, "Well, thank you." And then all of a sudden, all the teachers started standing up and saying, "Write that book, write that book." And I was like, "Oh, I don't want to write that. I don't want to go back to that." And of course, when I got on the plane on the way home, I started to jot down notes from that, and it ended up being a 6-book series. And it's probably my most successful work. It's a 6-book series that has spoken into a lot of people's lives. I've sat in conference rooms with bullies who have, with tears in their eyes, said, "You know, after I heard your assembly, I just feel so bad about myself." And I said, "You don't always have to. All you have to do is say, 'I'm sorry,' and I promise you, you'll have friends in this school." And I've had so many different testimonies to kids that have been liberated from the bullies because of that. You just have to understand that human being that you're picking on. You know, they're just, they're a little brother, they're a little sister, they're somebody that, you know, needs love just like you do. And most often what I find with the bullies is there's something broken, there's something not working.
They're just looking for the attention.
Yeah, they're crying out for something.
Yeah.
And humor has a tendency to take a lot of that away.
Yeah. humor is good for everyone. I've never met anybody that doesn't like to laugh, and people that don't, I don't trust them. They don't like dogs either, so.
Sure. You know, several things even just come to my mind just in hearing that short segment there is, you wonder how much kids today talk to their own parents about bullying, or are they afraid to tell their parents mm-hmm. they're getting bullied? And then, if you're a friend of a bully, you know, and you're in that circle of three, mm-hmm. you know, hey, saying one thing, you may be afraid of that bully too that you think is your friend, but man, just speaking up one time and just go, dude, leave him alone.
Well, like your leave him alone.
Yeah. I mean, you never know what just one word could say, you know.
Well, and when I'm doing assemblies, I'm teaching kids about bullying, but I'm teaching them in a fun storytelling because mm-hmm. I tell the story I just told you, and you know, it takes me an hour to tell that story with a lot of details. But I always tell the kids I end my assemblies with, there are three people that are participating here. You've got the bully, you got the bullied, but almost worse is the bystander, somebody who just stands by and watches it and never intervenes and does anything, because you have all the power to tell the bully stop. All you have to do is stand up together, because bullies back down. They don't like to be stood up to. And, you know, the one thing a bully wants, not every bully, you can't talk in generalities, but most of the bullies I've met, the one thing they want more than anything is friends. But they push everyone away. It's really hard to be friends with somebody who's mean, you know. Mm-hmm. But.
And nowadays, you and I were talking during the break, it's a lot different. I mean, you know, I even went to a Christian school my sophomore year through high school, you know. Got in a fight there once, you know. But then, I mean, your friends after, you know. I mean, nobody thought of the violence that happens today.
They didn't take it to the next level.
Right, absolutely.
And nowadays, you just never know.
No. Well, and, you know, I've read so many people, you know, say, you know, be kind because you don't know what that person's going through. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going through something all the time. Life is always full of ups and downs. And if you pick the wrong day to pick on someone, that's when they snap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had an experience in junior high where my mom was, she was down in Denver. I grew up in Fort Collins, and she was down in Denver having a 12-hour operation. She had a brain tumor. And my dad told us that morning that my mom may not survive the day. And I was just crushed because, you know, I'm an eighth grader going to school with the thought that my mom, I may never see her again. And this one kid who always gave me and always making fun of me, I'm bow-legged and all this, and I just had it. And then he picked the wrong day. And he came up to me at the drinking fountain and started making fun of me. And I just turned on him and said, you say one more word. And he said one more word. And unfortunately, we settled it.
Yeah. You know,
him on the floor, me not.
Yeah.
But the weird thing, like you said, 2 days later, mm-hmm. best buddies.
Yeah.
Because he finally left me alone. And then he finally was afraid of me because mm-hmm. I stood up for myself.
Yeah.
And I don't advocate fighting unless that's the only way.
Sometimes, I mean, I'm just being honest with you. Sometimes that's what you got to do.
My dad used to say, let your alligator mouth overload your hummingbird rear. And you do that with the wrong person.
Right.
And you're in trouble.
Right.
Because, like you say, you never know when somebody's right at that edge.
Yeah. Yeah. And sadly now, when kids are at that edge, it's terrible what happens.
Because they can't find a place to let it out, talk.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's difficult.
Yeah.
Because they're made fun of. And like you talked at the break about the phones and how people are bullying with phones. Different ways that they go about doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't get away from it now. You know, at school, you used to go home and you'd be in your neighborhood with the neighborhood kids.
Mom and dad and the kids there, my friends, yeah.
But now, you know, you log on to Facebook and some kid's calling you ugly, and so it doesn't go away. So stop logging on Facebook.
And you're seeing, that's one way. And then you're seeing a lot of the suicides that go on because of that.
Right, yeah.
Now, you do some of these activities. You have different meetings at schools, and you talk to students, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been visiting schools for 18 years. And I really feel sorry for the first schools I went to. I've gotten a lot better since. But I really enjoy that part of my job because I get to do storytelling. I get to show kids that, you know, what I do is I talk about everyday things in your life. So the kids say, well, if he can tell a story about that, I can tell a story about my thing. And then we break into writing workshops and I show them, you know, how to write a story, just taking the who we're writing about, where they are, when it happens, why I'm writing it, and what happens in the story. And very quickly, within an hour, we've diagrammed a whole beginning of a picture book. And so the reluctant writers in the room, they see that, wow, this can really be fun. And, I mean, we're having a lot of fun here. And the writers in the room are just like, oh, my gosh, I got some tools that I can now figure out what to do with my story. So everybody's a storyteller to some degree.
Sure.
Just have to figure out how to
That's true.
Out.
Right. You're listening to a special edition of Your Money Matters. Justin Matott is our guest. We got to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Trust your pet's care to Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center. Hi, this is Scott Watley, and we've trusted our pets to Lone Tree for over 15 years. There are many reasons we love them, and it's great to have all of our pet care needs met under one roof. Whether your pet needs medical, dental, surgical care, boarding, grooming, or obedience training, the friendly and experienced staff at Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center has you covered. As accredited members of the American Animal Hospital Association, you can rest assured that Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center meets the highest standards of veterinary care. And they're a Gold Star member of the BBB and a member of HaystackHelp.com. Check out their blogs at LoneTreeVet.com as they share great insight on pet care. Lone Tree is open 7 days a week for your convenience. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, they believe all pets deserve to have a good life. Give them a call, 303-708-8050, or check them out at LoneTreeVet.com.
You will regret not calling the police after your accident. Take it from Kevin Flesh with Flesh and Beck Law.
It's one of those situations where you want to make sure that you're covering your own self. And we talk about harvesting the evidence yourself, getting pictures, getting recordings of things, and doing all of that. And that's important because sometimes the police get it wrong, but the majority of the time they get it right. And they're going to be trained to ask the right questions. Our public servants are there for that sort of thing, whether it's a small accident or a big accident. They're trained to get this information so that we can rely on it later.
Always call the police after an accident. Then call Kevin Flesh with Flesh and Beck Law for a free, no-obligation consultation. 303-806-8886. That's 303-806-8886. Flesh and Beck Law. They get results.
Stack Optical has been providing the most comprehensive quality eye and vision care for over 50 years. Stack Optical is a family-owned business, and they're proud to be one of the few optical offices that have their own on-site eyeglass production and eyeglass repair studio. Your one-stop shop for all of your vision needs, eye exams, glasses, and contacts. And don't forget about the Stack Sports Pack. Let owner and certified optician Alan Stack customize a pair of specialized glasses that will make your next outing on the golf course or on the gun range better than ever before. Call today for your $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. That's 303-321-1578. Or check them out at stackoptical.com.
Got a question for the station? Email info@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Now back to Haystack Help Radio.
And we are back. You're listening to Haystack Help Radio, special edition of Your Money Matters. Kurt Rogers with us from Affordable Interest Mortgage. Once again, any mortgage needs, give Kurt a call, 720-895-0500. Our special guest today, Justin Matott. You can check out that website, justinmatott.com. That's M-A-T-O-T-T.com.
Okay, just before the break, we were talking about writing a book and what you tell people. And I was asking you about, you know, I have an idea about a book. And I said, okay, how do we get started? So if someone is thinking about a book, you've talked about the program you go to where the people are selling things, the flea markets that you go to, and how people come up and say, what do you tell somebody who's thinking about a book, what they should do? How do they know they've got the right book? How do they know how they should start it?
Well, they're farmer's markets, not flea markets.
Farmer's markets. Close enough.
I'm just kidding.
I knew it had nothing to do.
I'm not selling fleas. Yeah, I mean, people come up to me all the time, and they, you know, they say that they've had this idea. And some teachers will say to me, you know, I've had this idea for 20 years. And I'm like, wait, you've let this idea just sit in your head for 20 years, and you never sat down and write? You're a teacher. And so, I mean, you know, as simplistic as it sounds, if you have a really great idea, something that just keeps gnawing at you, my suggestion is get a notebook, get a sharp pencil and some erasers, and just start writing down what you're thinking. It may not be great the first time. Most first drafts aren't, but they're really creative. And, you know, my parents were both English professors, and what my dad would always say is, let your story pour down on the paper. And don't worry about whether things are spelled right. Don't worry about commas and exclamation points or any of that. Just get your story down. And what's interesting is that was the best information I ever got, because I was kind of locked. Because what I would do, I was writing a novel, and what I would do is I would write a page, and then I'd go back and read the page and make all the grammatical corrections while I was writing. And the problem with that is you lose your creativity, because you're going to something that's very organized when you're creative. You know, creative juices are flowing, let them flow. Yeah. And so once my dad said that to me, and he's a PhD English professor who teaches English, and he's like, I can tell that you're writing haltingly and you're stopping because your creativity is really going well and then it just stops. So just write. Don't worry about it. Even if you write 500 pages and you don't have a period in it, who cares about grammar? Write your story. And after that, I was just liberated to just let my stories flow, because I didn't have to worry about being graded on them or anything like that. And because you can always go back and change the grammar, you can't go back and get that creative spark again. So if you have an idea, just write it down and keep writing until it writes you out. I mean, at some point, it's going to exhaust you. You're not going to know where to go with it next. Put it aside and go back to it in 2 days, and I promise you'll pick it up.
Yeah, something else will pop in your mind and you'll start going again.
Yeah, yeah. So it really is that simple. Just sit down and write. Don't carry it around for 20 years.
Whatever the passion is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, platforms that you write with, you're talking about bullying. What are some of the areas that are important to you on different topics that you're writing about?
I really like writing books that have a lot of humor. And when I write a children's book, I never think of it as a children's book. And I learned that from Dr. Seuss. Not personally, I didn't sit down and talk to him. But he never felt he was writing to children. He was a political satirist for the New Yorker magazine. And so if you read his books with that in mind, you see they're all political satire. I mean, he was always writing something that was a political bent about human beings. And so what I have, my kind of my thing with writing is I always want to write a book that is going to be pleasing to the parent and pleasing to the child, or pleasing to the teacher and the child, or pleasing to the grandparent and the child. If the adult isn't enjoying that book after the 53rd read, they're not going to read you again. And how I got into writing children's books, because I had three books published for adults, and having sons, I realized my sons really liked it when I told them stories, particularly the story about this crazy little old lady that lived up the hill in my neighborhood. And that was my first book. It was called Old Lady Griselda. And it's become a really well-known book because it's something everybody can relate to. It's don't judge a book by its cover. She's really weird looking, but when you meet her, she's really awesome. She's just a spectacular human being, just really kooky. And but the reason I got into writing books was my older son, JJ, he had this penchant for this book called The Clown Arounds. And I'm colorophobic. I don't like clowns. I mean, clowns actually freak me out a lot. And so every night I'd go to bed with these clowns on my mind and have nightmares. And it was a series, which was worse. And he was one of those kids where, Daddy, read this one again. Well, I've read this 25 times. Can we read
this? I don't like the book.
I want this. I don't like the book. And all of a sudden, one day, strangely enough, the books disappeared. We could not find them. And it was 2 days of a very sad child, but we just couldn't find them. You know, and the trash man had come.
They were gone.
They were gone. And so instead of, you know, when he really wanted those stories, I would just continually tell them about this crazy little old lady. And they finally told me, Daddy, you have to write a book about her. And so I did. I sat down and wrote the book for them, not realizing that was what was going to put me on the map for children. And so from that point on, I realized for an adult and a child to enjoy a book together, it's got to have that nuance that an adult's going to get it, and it's going to be funny every time, not something that's just, you know, very simple. And so in most of my books, I'll have something that the parent gets on a different level than the kid, and they enjoy reading it more than once or twice or 300 times.
Or 300 times.
Yeah, I have had parents come to me at the farmer's market and say, I am so sick of this book. I mean, I really need another one because he wants to read this all the time. That's a huge compliment to me.
Sure.
But I do understand the dilemma.
Right. So what, you know, we probably don't have a lot of kids listening to our show right now.
Probably.
But as far as adults and maybe parents, and maybe, as I said earlier, they have no idea. They don't really talk about this kind of stuff with their kids. You know, I mean, is it something to bring up to your kids, you think, of just... I'll start to say around the dinner table, but not many people do that anymore either.
They should.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, is it something that parents should bring up and just say, hey, Johnny, you know, listening to a program today about bullying, does that happen at your school?
Yeah.
Or does that happen to you? And
Absolutely. I think one of the reasons I never brought it up to my parents was shame. I was ashamed of myself because I wanted to be tough, and I didn't feel tough at all. And so I didn't want my dad to be disappointed in me. And that's just stinking thinking. I mean, it's just, you know, you're a child.
It's normal. to think that way, but it's not right.
No.
And they convinced you are what they're telling you, so you think less of yourself.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the other kids won't hang out with you because the bullies are picking on you. I must just be a dork, you know. And so, you know, my wife taught middle school, and the issue of suicide, which we've talked about a little bit, my wife's adamant about the fact that you do not shirk away from talking about that, because if a child is showing any signs of it, push in. Let them talk. Talk to them very plainly about suicide, very plainly about bullying, because the issue doesn't get worse or go away by talking about it. It goes away by a parent getting active and saying, okay, wait, so you're telling me this is happening to you day after day, and they're not aware of it. But I think most parents, you know, myself included, I think you see signals in your children when there's a change in their behavior, like my dad saw. You know, I'm usually the kid that's bouncing off the walls and talking constantly, and now I'm moping and not really talking too much. And my dad noticed there's a difference in my son, and I don't like it. So I think, you know, and like you, the point you pointed out earlier, you know, that I think one of the problems we have in a society is that we don't sit down for dinner together and just talk. And, you know, we sit in front of the TV and talk, but we don't really talk about substance. And so I think, you know, that's one thing that we all need to do is figure out how to push into each other. You know, if somebody's sad, they need to talk about it. They need to get it out. It's just human need. So with a parent, I think if you see anything in your child's behavior that seems like it's different, or they're saddened, or they don't want to go to school, they're complaining about going to school, there's more to it than you know.
Right. Yeah. What's the reaction you get when some of the talks you give at schools and things? I mean, does it both come from faculty and students' reaction?
Yeah, one of the best reactions I ever got was I was in a middle school, and there was this very large eighth grader. I mean, he was probably 6'5", and he was standing against the wall while all the other kids were seated. And I told the story. And when I'm in middle schools and high schools, so I can be a lot more specific about the bullying. I try to really not scare kids in elementary school by giving them specifics about being held down and pummeled. Because then they're, you know, the bully's on, you know, around every corner then.
Sure.
But with a middle schooler, you know, they say things to you like, oh, I saw Chucky. Well, who cares? That's not even scary. So I was at this junior high, and this big kid was standing up against the wall, and I was telling the story about these three boys and what they did to me. They brutalized me one day. And he comes off the wall and just screams, I'll kick their butts for you. And I just stopped and looked at him. I'm thinking, well, you could do it. And one of the teachers said, you know, back up. And so he went back to the wall and kind of sulked. And I just said to him, you know, with the microphone, I said, dude, I wished you had been there to flank me, because you're the kind of guy that could bodyguard anyone. And but he was so adamant because my story had pulled something out of
something inside of him.
But then the weird thing is, I'm sitting in the teacher's lounge having lunch, and one of the counselors comes in and says, could I borrow you for just a second? And I said, sure. And she takes me into a room, and that boy's sitting in the room. And she said, what do you want to tell Mr. Matat? And this kid said, I'm a terrible bully. And I felt really bad when I heard your story. And I said, what do you mean you're a terrible bully? He says, I don't know. I just always get in trouble. That's why I was standing, because I can't sit with people because I was picking on some kids. And I was like, well, why do you do it? And he didn't know, just didn't have an answer. And I said, well, why did you want to protect me? He said, because I like you. I said, well, why do you like me? You don't even know me. He says, no, I just feel like you're the kind of person nobody should ever pick on. And I said, so the kids in your class, what if they're just like me? And he was like, wow. And the counselor said, you know, Tyler is a lot like Mr. Matat. He's goofy. You know, and you make fun of him a lot. But I think Mr. Matat was probably a lot like Tyler. Why don't you lay off at Tyler? Well, you know, a month later, I'm hearing stories about this kid out on the playground, just vigilant if somebody's picking on someone else. He's like, not here. You're not doing that here.
That ain't happening.
He became an anti-bullying advocate for the school. And when you take a kid that big out of the bullying game, the school can rest.
And see, right? And we've talked about it, but you bring up the point, getting in, opening the door, cracking in, and going deep with that. It has such great ramifications as to how that child changed their behavior immediately, and it changes the attitude of the school.
Totally, totally. Yeah, because when you take one bully out of the component, I mean, because, like, if it's the worst bully in the school, like they called him and he called himself, and he becomes an anti-bullying advocate, the school can rest.
Well, if he's eighth grader, 6 foot, 300 pounds, yet no other bully's really going to have a whole lot that's going to have control over him in the rest of the school.
Except for his big brother, who calls him tiny.
No kidding. You're listening to a special edition of Your Money Matters. Justin Matat is our guest. You can check out his website, justinmatat.com. That's M-A-T-O-T-T.com. And real quick before a break, what's kind of in the upcoming plans in the next months or year you're working on, and just in your head, maybe.
Yeah, no, I've got something really cool cooking right now. My Gabriel Peters series, which is a six-book series that I mentioned, is being turned into comic books right now. And so at Comic-Con next July, it's going to be featured out there, and we're going to see what we can get Robert Downey Jr. to do with it, because they produce children's books to movies. And so, I mean, I think big. Why not?
You know, yeah, sure.
He hasn't said no to me yet. I've never talked to him, but so the comic book stuff is really fun, and then I've got some other. I work with four illustrators pretty consistently, and we're all working on projects, so I've got a lot of stuff in the hopper.
Cool.
Well, you are pretty persistent when you want to sell 4,700 books.
Yeah. Yes. Well, 47,000 now.
47,000. Yeah. You are pretty persistent.
I've upped the game.
Yeah. We got to take our last break. We'll be right back.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
David R. Cishon, certified estate planner and registered financial consultant, specializes in working with people who are planning for retirement and retired clients who want to preserve and grow their assets.
Education is the greatest equalizer is my theme. It's always been. More people know, the better their decisions are, the more comfortable they become. So when people come in, we take, some people say, an excessive amount of time learning about the client themselves, who they are, what are their feelings. I don't care how much assets they have. If their assets are important to them, that's critical to me.
Call now for your free consultation with David Cishon of Householder Group. 720-482-1917. That's 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. My name is Scott Whatley. A few more minutes here. Kurt Rogers with us from Affordable Interest Mortgage. Our guest just been this hour, Justin Matott. And JustinMatott.com. That's M-A-T-O-T-T. And real quick, Justin, is there like a calendar on your website where you're going to be and what's going on?
Yeah, there's a link on my website. And for the rest of this month, I do two different farmers markets locally. I do a farmers market at Southwest Plaza on Saturdays from 8 to 2, and then Highlands Ranch Town Center from 10 to 2.
Okay.
And that's
so
where I get to meet
my audience.
People
can just come by and talk to you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And people do. It's crazy.
And you bring books?
Yeah, I sign a lot of books at those farmers markets. 4,700 copies. Yeah, this weekend.
Okay, you had mentioned you have two children. I happen to know both of them, and I've heard stories from them. So you got to tell us a story about raising your boys and them, you know, the way your mind works and the way you have a sense of humor, because I see that in both of your children.
Right, right. Well, fortunately, I have a very grounded wife, and I'll tell you a story about moving to a new neighborhood, because it's a bullying story. And my son JJ was in this new school, so he's the new kid in class. And these three boys were fairly mean to him from the very start. And when he would go to the lunchroom, they wouldn't let him sit at a table. And so I'm thinking about my son sitting on the floor. And there's one thing, when you're a dad, you know, don't mess with my kids. And so I'm thinking, okay, so we got to figure this thing out. So I pulled JJ aside, and JJ's a really sweethearted person, always has been. And his brother, a little bit more feisty, and his brother loved my advice. But I told JJ, so here's the deal. Those three bullies, you pick one of them and tell them, you're not going to treat me this way anymore. So we're going to leave the school grounds and go across the street and just get it settled. And my wife, being a teacher, is like, I I don't think that's a good idea. And I said, sometimes boys just have to wrestle it out. They're not going to get into a big fight. I mean, they're little kids. But, you know, he's got to assert himself or they're going to pick on him every day. And so I send JJ off with, you know, that advice. And my wife is just shaking her head like, nah, it's not good. And but Ethan's like, yeah, this is awesome. And so, you know, I worked at home. I had left my corporate job and I was working at home and I was waiting for him to come home. Ethan comes running up the hill because they would walk from this little neighborhood school. And Ethan had just this big smile on his face. And I said, what's going on, dude? What's going on? He goes, you're not going to believe what just happened. And I said, did JJ take care of it? And he goes, oh, yeah. And I said, where is he? He says, well, he's coming. And I said, is he all right? He says, yeah, he's fine. So, you know, Ethan goes running inside, gets a snack. And JJ comes walking up the street and he's with these kids. And, you know, we're in a new neighborhood. I didn't know who the kids were. And so they all came up to the door, and JJ said, hey, can I go up to, I shouldn't probably use the right names, right? Mm-hmm. Can I go up to Carl's house? And I said, Carl, wait a second. I said, JJ, can you talk to me for a second? So he came inside. I said, isn't that the kid that's picking on you? He says, yeah. And I said, so why do you want to go to his house? Because we're friends. I said, did you punch him? And he says, no. Mom gave me a candy bar, and I cut it up and gave him all a piece of it. And that's how they made peace. Yeah. So, you know, much, much wiser woman. But it was funny because, you know, he ended up, you know, knowing these kids all through junior high and high school, and they were friends. And, you know, you can settle things a lot easier sometimes.
Sure. What about the deal real quick? And let's just hit my mind, and we've got a couple minutes left. But sometimes parents today want to just take care of all their kids' problems. And that's built in all of us. Like I said, we don't want our kids to go through something. And I heard a term last year called a snowplow parent. And that's the parent that just wants to move everything. Obstacle out of the kid's way, all right? But what would you say to parents that maybe you're like that and say, hey, look, you got to let your kids go through some of these battles on their own or they're going to be 30, 40 years old doing this. Right. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Any advice there?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing, I've never heard the term snowplow, but I totally understand what it is. I think there's also the parent that my son never does anything wrong. You know, there's no way the teachers, you know, all of them are talking about the same issue. There's no way it's my kid. And so making an excuse for that kid, well, the kid always has an excuse. He's not going to change the behavior. I think when kids are dealing with bullies, the best thing is for them to deal with it, you know, head on, just, you know, like I did, you know, use your sense of humor. If you're not a funny person, that isn't the formula. If you're really good at math and they're not good at math, offer to help them with their math. Because you're going to find the Achilles heel because they're a human being and they're going to have compassion at some point.
They have weaknesses, too.
Yeah. Absolutely, and more weaknesses than they'll ever let on. That's right. Why they do what they do. But I think parents often stand in the way of their kids of learning, because like you said, if you're 40 and you're having to learn that lesson, it's a whole lot harder. Mm-hmm. I think when parents make excuses for their kids, what they don't realize is at school, kids don't make excuses for those kids. And it can be a much tougher thing if the world disciplines you. I think parents need to learn how to discipline their kids correctly and with love, you know, and just say, you've got the stuff. Just go to school and... The main thing that I do when it comes to talking to kids, whether it's one-on-one with them or in an assembly, is what a bully requires is your power. And they want your power because that makes them feel powerful for the moment. If you don't give them the power, for instance, if a bully comes up to you and says, well, that's an ugly shirt, you say, I know, isn't that cool? They don't know what to do with that, you know? Well, you're weird. Ah, we're all weird. You know, I mean, just giving them nothing.
You got to see my brother.
right. And just making light of it and not letting the bully see that they're hurting your feelings, even if they are. You know, even if they're getting in, just don't let them see that because they get bored with it. Mm-hmm. They'll move on to another victim.
They want somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. And it works. I mean, I wouldn't say it works 100% of the time, but predominantly it works.
Sure. Well, hour went quickly, gentlemen.
It always goes quickly. Justin has got, he's got some great stories. Yep. If anybody wants, how many books have you written now? 16?
Written or published?
Published.
Published, like around 30.
30. Mm-hmm. Okay. And most of these books are, like you said, they're kind of from a kid's point of view, but a parent can get it.
Yeah. I have two segments on my website. There are pictures for 8 and down, basically, and 8 and up. So I've got chapter books for kids that are reading chapter books. I've got picture books. I've got poetry books. I've got funny books told by a dog. I mean, I have all kinds of different books on my website. And my calendar is on my website, so they can see where I'm going to be if they want to come down.
Which Farmers Market, right?
Yeah, or I do a lot of things this time of year, and it's all on the calendar.
Cool. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks
I really
for having
appreciate
me.
It. We're going to have you back.
All right.
Check out Justin's.
Maybe one of your kids with you.
Check out Justin's website, justinmatott.com. Again, that's MATOTT.com. Thanks for joining us today for Haystack Help Radio and a special edition of Your Money Matters. Hope you have a great rest of your day and leave it right here on KLZ 560.
Opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.